Welcome to the Australian Hiker Podcast, Australia's longest running hiking podcast, downloaded over 1 million times worldwide and providing you with an Australian perspective on all things hiking. We're your hosts, Tim and Jill Savage, coming to you from Ngunnawal and Ngambri country.
This is episode 288 of the Australian Hiker Podcast. And in this week's episode, we talk about the Kigari Great Walk, expectations and hesitations. Before we get into today's episode, if you'd like to help support Australian Hiker and this podcast, there are a couple of ways that you can help us out. Firstly, by subscribing on your podcast host of choice so that each episode is available as soon as it's published. And if you have the opportunity, leave us a five-star review. Another way to support us is go to the Australian Hiker website at www.australianhiker.com.au and click on the support us page and buy us a coffee. You can do a one-off donation or become a monthly supporter. All donations are greatly appreciated and help us to continue producing this podcast and blog. Now let's get on to today's episode. As this podcast goes to air, we are just about to head off to walk the Queensland-based Kigari Great Walk. Many people might know this walk as the Fraser Island Great Walk, but the traditional owner name has been in place for a number of years now. But the older name, the Fraser Island, is probably still known by more people and probably a bit easier to pronounce as well. In this episode, we talk about our pre-trip expectations, and there are, as the title says, a few hesitations with that as well about what we're expecting on the trip. And in some respects, this was a very difficult walk to sort of plan and pin down. And I'll be honest, Jill did most of the planning.
Did my head in.
Just the transport, the information isn't the easiest thing in the world. So I think it's not a bad thing that we're going to do this walk and record a podcast. And when we come back, we'll also do a full write-up, which will have all the details, and hopefully it'll make it a bit easier for anyone planning to do this walk. So we're going to go through and talk about, I suppose, our planning process, a bit about the logistics and what we expect to see on this trip. And some of these things have been a bit of we're not sure. We think we have the information, but we're not 100% sure what that's going to look like once we're actually on ground. So we'll talk about where we think there's some issues as we go. So the first one is transport.
Yeah, so it's a little bit similar to planes, trains and automobiles. It's planes, automobiles and ferries. And so it did take a little bit of effort in connecting things up. So essentially you get into Hervey Bay and you get the ferry over to the island. And once you're there, you actually then, to get to the trailhead, you actually need to get a taxi to the trailhead. And this is assuming you don't have a four-wheel drive with you or access to a four-wheel drive. So just organising all of that was a little bit complicated. And in terms of the taxi, they're obviously dependent on the tides as well. So there's a scheduling issue around when you can actually get into the cab and drive along the beach to get to the trailhead.
Now, from our perspective, we're coming out of Canberra. It's not just a matter of driving north of Brisbane 300 kilometres. And if we did live in Brisbane, we may well drive our car up there. But in this case here, we flew. And we weren't 100% sure where we were flying into. And it did turn out that we could get a plane from Canberra. And I think we're going via Sydney.
No, we're going via Brisbane.
Canberra, Brisbane, and then Hervey Bay.
But we could have gone via Sydney. But, yeah, it's just, I guess, a different arrangement. So lots of travel involved. And, you know, I guess that's what Tim was saying about in terms of the slightly more complicated logistics.
Now, still on the transport side of things, we've also booked the local cab who tends to run most of the hikers around the island. And in this case here, we're starting at the Dilley Trailhead. So we have a taxi booked for the morning after we fly in. So we're actually staying one day at the resort, and we'll end up staying 2 days after the trip at the resort as well. But we will get a taxi from there to the start of the trailhead. And I'm not quite sure. Do you remember what time we're actually starting? Where we think you'll start the walk, or are being picked up for the transport to the trailhead?
9:35 in the morning,
which is not an unreasonable time for most people, but for us, most times I'd prefer to be starting to walk at probably about 7 o'clock. So it's a bit more of a leisurely start to the day. Facilities wise, we have a series of campsites. And the campsites need to be booked. So you're not actually booking the trip itself. You're booking the individual campsites, which means that if you don't, if you all of a sudden say, well, I want to go and start this walk tomorrow, you may find that the campsites you need aren't available. So I think it's one of these things you need to book in advance. And from our perspective, we are hiking over a period of 6 days. For a lot of people, 6 to 8 days seems to be the norm.
Mm-hmm.
And a number of people do it in 5 days as well.
So we've booked 5 nights of campsites for us at this time. It was $7.25 per person for each of the campsites. So $14.50 for every campsite that we stay at on those 5 nights.
So, again, not overly expensive in that respect, and the booking was reasonably easy to do that. But I suppose the most complex thing is working out what sort of distances did we want to cover each day. Now, we'll talk about trail distances in a moment, but the trail is roughly 80 to 90 kilometres, and really
therein lies another complication.
Yeah, and there are some additional walks you can go through and do. So if you just do the bare minimum, we're looking at around about 77, 78 kilometres, and there's some add-on sections on little areas you can go through and do as well. So we weren't too sure about that, so we've mostly planned on doing the 78-kilometre version, and we'll see what happens once we get there. We may decide, depending on how fast we're travelling, what we're feeling like, we might do the additional bits that might add up and change that sort of distance.
Yeah, and, mostly they're reasonable distances. The longest day we've got is 16 kilometres on the fourth day, but mostly they're around 13, 14, 15 kilometres. With a slightly shorter one on the last day. So, I think it is in different terrain, so we'll see how we go, but we should be okay with those distances.
So with those 6 days in total, as you said, we've got 14.3, 15.2 kilometres, 12.3 kilometres, 16.1 kilometres and 13.1 kilometres, and the last day 6.7. So the last day is fairly cruisy sort of day, and potentially we could have combined that with day five and done a 20-kilometre day the day before. But realistically, from our point of view, we get into at the end of day six and we've got our transport booked at a certain time.
So we have to do that 6.7 kilometres by well before 11 a.m. because that's when the cab's coming to pick us up.
Yeah, so if we allow 3 hours to get in, that'll be sort of quite comfortable. So we'll probably end up leaving at sort of 8 o'clock, or in fact probably 7:30, I'd say, and that'll give us 3.5 hours to comfortably get in there. Overall, those distances aren't overly onerous. And Gari, and it's spelt Kigari, but it's pronounced Gari, is well known for being very sandy sort of island. And in fact, I think it is actually one of the largest sand islands around, and certainly in Australia. I think from memory, it is Australia's largest sand island. So we expect, even though the distances aren't long, we're going to be sort of having some slow going on some of the sections of the walk.
Yeah, and then other parts are more form trail with, through a light forest and so on. So it'll be a big mix of trail tread and vegetation. So I'm expecting, quite a bit of variety and quite a lot to see. And certainly in the booking process, those on island that I've talked with are pretty excited about their island, let me tell you. They love it.
Now, getting back to the campsites again, as Jill mentioned, you need to go through and book these campsites individually. We're expecting flat ground for the most part, but again, I'm sure like any looking at some of the images on the Queensland website, the Queensland Government website, they look like there's some sloping areas in some of them. So ideally, we want to pick the flattest area we can. Each of the campsites has a picnic table, a water tank, and roughly half of them are fenced and the other half are unfenced. And we'll talk about why that is in a few more minutes. So while there are water tanks at each of the campsites, I'd still be inclined to go through and take a water filter. Otherwise, we're likely to end up drinking, if we are drinking water out of tanks, that could have anything in it. And again, if we're using fresh water, inland water, again, we're just not too sure what the quality is like. It'll be clear, but again, it's always best to be on the safe side and filter where you can. So we haven't actually had this conversation yet about what sort of filter we're going to carry, but it might be just as easy to take our gravity filter. Works well for two people and is a relatively quick process. Toilet-wise, we've got the traditional long-drop toilets. Now, I would probably expect there to be toilet paper in there, but again, I wouldn't like to guarantee that. So as usual, we'll tend to carry whatever toilet paper we think we need for the trip. It's better to be safe than sorry.
A limited supply. We count those sheets of toilet paper.
And the other thing worth noting as well is there's no bush toileting, which means, now I'm guessing, I'm taking a bit of guess here. I think urinating on the trail you probably get away with, but no digging holes and burying toilet paper and solid waste.
Yeah, so you have to hold it.
Yeah. And they do actually talk about if you are doing that, you need to take it out with you. So if you're not inclined to be able to cope from going morning to evening without having to use
a poo. Without having a poo. Let's be blunt. That's what we're doing.
You may need to sort of carry one of the wag bags or the solid waste bags with you if you think that's likely to be an issue. The trail, as Jill mentioned, is most of it tends to be pretty much natural trail, beach, and lots of sand. But again, looking at the images from the website, they also look like there are bush trails, but it's sandy. It doesn't look like it's hard granite soil. So I'm hoping for a soft trail and looking forward to that.
See, I prefer the harder trails rather than the softer trails.
Yeah, well, I think it's one of those sort of things. It's going to be interesting. And again, without having actually been there, it'll be interesting to see what we expect and what actually happens in reality.
Yeah, I'm just hoping it's not as sandy and deep, soft sandy as the Cape to Cape track. But anyway, we'll see how we go with that.
I must admit, there was an image that I was looking at where I thought, oh, this is just a close-up of the sand. And then I realised there were these tiny little people that looked like ants in the middle of it. So large sandy areas.
This was a dune sand dune.
Yeah, expecting that to be fairly soft.
Okay, great, yes.
Now, we talked about some of the campsites being fenced and some being unfenced. And the reason for that is Gari is known for dingoes. And in fact, this is as we're doing this podcast, it's late April 2024, and there have been a series of dingo attacks on Gari early this year. Now, having said that, dingo breeding season is the early part of the year, so you know they're obviously a bit toey. They're looking. They're focused with one thing on their mind. Normally, you tend not to get to travel in dingo breeding season, ideally. But having said that, the dingoes are always there. And unfortunately, people tend to feed dingoes, which doesn't help anybody.
Even though there's lots and lots and lots of information and guidance and, requirements not to feed the dingoes, people still do. And someone was actually, when I was saying that I was doing this walk, they said that they were there doing some four-wheel driving, and they actually took a photo of someone feeding the dingoes in front of a sign that said, "Do not feed the dingoes." I don't know what you do.
Health-wise, it's not good for the dingoes, and it also encourages them to look for people as a food source. So with the fenced camping sites, it's designed to keep the dingoes out, basically. And apparently each of the campsites has a food box. So you're storing whatever food is in the food boxes and not in the bottom of your tent, which, again, if the dingoes are looking for food and they happen to be around, you don't want them sniffing around your tent. That's probably the main concern, I think, from our perspective.
Certainly my concern, that's for sure, the dingoes.
And it is interesting, they're talking about, particularly along the beach areas, not letting young children run because apparently they get seen as prey. So not that as campers or hikers you're necessarily going to have very young children, but if you do, it's something to keep an eye on and keep kids close, particularly when there are dingoes around. Mobile phone reception is a bit variable. I've gone through and looked online about availability of mobile phone reception. It tends to be sporadic. It tends to be on the outer edges of the island. And looking at where the trail runs through the island,
there's not a lot of coverage.
So I think it'd almost be an expectation of not having phone signal and with that not having internet signal as well. So, but we'll see how that goes. But I'm not expecting a lot. Hiking trail is a fire-free trail, so don't expect to have campfires at the end of the day. I mean, there are no facilities for them anyway, but don't go looking for firewood from the bush to set up your own fire. One of the things in relation to fire, I looked at doing this walk a few years ago, and they do tend to do burning off in roughly around about May each year. And while they don't tend to burn off on the trail, you're still getting smoke in the area. So, you know, have a look when you're planning a trip whether there are any large burn-offs planned. And it's more about, you know, walking in an area where there's lots of smoke. But, you know, if it impacts your lungs because you're a bit susceptible to smoke or you just don't like the smell of smoke, it might be better to avoid those times of the year.
And there are a couple of warnings out already that indicate that there's going to be some burning off around the trail. So we are expecting to experience some smoke.
Scenery-wise, again, this is very much a coastal sort of walk. So even when we're walking inland, we're not really that far away from the coast. So we're expecting a coastal sort of climate, and it is north of Brisbane, so not expecting to have cold nights.
I'm looking forward to that.
I think weather-wise, we are looking at around about 20 to 23 degrees during the daytime. My preference is for something a bit cooler than that, but we'll see how we go. It will be coastal, so I'm not expecting it to be as humid as, say, Cairns or a tropical Queensland and a bit more in the centre would be.
And the overnight temperatures at the moment are around 16, 17 degrees, so not a huge drop. So that means in terms of our sleeping bag options, we're going to be trialling a few things out, but we'll see how that goes.
And including in my case, I've got a quilt to try out and we'll see how that goes. We talked about transport earlier on. Now, transport is tide dependent. So as Jill said, we will be starting our walk or being picked up at 9:30. Ideally, I would have liked to have been picked up at 7 or 7:30. But again, it's more about this is an island that is impacted on by tides. So again, it's a sort
islands
of,
usually are too.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a sort of thing that may impact on how long your first day is and how long your last day is, depending on where you've started and finished. So we could have very easily done a much shorter first day. But again, I think rather than doing sort of 6 kilometres on the first day, I thought it seemed reasonable to do, I think we ended up doing about 14.
14.3, yeah.
And I thought even if we're only walking 3 kilometres an hour, you know, it might take us 5 hours. That's still plenty of time. Even if it took us 6 or 7 hours, we've got plenty of time to get into camp. So that first day distance is not unreasonable. Now, as far as animal and bird life is concerned, I'm not exactly sure what we're expecting to see. So apart from dingoes, that's a given, I think. But I'm not quite sure what the bird life is like up there, or I'm assuming there are kangaroos and wallabies of some sort. I don't know. So that's going to be a bit of hit and miss, I think.
Yeah, and this really interesting thing about information on the trail. There's this kind of overarching, it's fantastic, but not a lot of detail about why. And, you know, you can get a sense of that from some of the images. But it is an interesting one that while there's so much enthusiasm about being on the island and what you experience, it's really, really hard, specifically on the trail, to get a sense of that. I'm expecting dingoes, which is going to be my biggest worry of the trip. I'm expecting insects, so I have got my head net ready to go. That's more of an irritation than anything else. You know, obviously sand, again, another irritation rather than a worry.
So, yeah, we'll see what we come up with. And again, from as Jill mentioned, for us there's a lot of little fine detail. And we've done quite a lot of looking through a number of websites, through a number of blogs, number of write-ups. And for us, this is very much one of the reasons we started Australian Hiker. We like to know every little bit of detail, and certainly we'll bring all that information in the write-ups themselves. Now, when to walk. Really, you can potentially do this walk at any time of the year, but I think the main walking season tends to be around about mid-March through to around about mid-October. And again, a bit trying to avoid if they are doing any burning off, so you're avoiding that smell of smoke. So you can generally go through and have a look in advance when the burn-offs are planned. And as I said, typically May often tends to be a burn-off month. So it may be a month. And I did look at doing this walk a few years ago, and that was one of the things that put me off was I was planning on hiking in May and they were doing burn-offs, and it would have just meant I would have been walking through the smell of smoke for a lot of the walk. So preferred to do something where, you know, we've got a bit more sea breeze rather than smoke. From our perspective, expectations versus hesitations. Now, as I said, hesitations are there's a lack of information in some areas, and I'm a person driven by information down to the fine details, whereas I know a lot of people prefer to be surprised. But in my case, I'd like to know exactly what we're seeing on each day. And you know, and one of the things I've struggled to find is, what do the trail markers look like? we did the Cape to Cape walk last year. I've done a lot of other walks, and each of the walks tend to have its own little logo as a trail marker. And this one doesn't seem to have that. Now, I'm not sure.
Well, maybe it does. Yeah. It's just not well known, maybe. Well,
yeah, and this is doing searches on the internet saying trail markers for Kagari Great Walk or trail markers for Fraser Island Great Walk. Nothing that's really obvious. So it's going to be interesting to see what that looks like. Difficulty-wise, I think because we're not doing huge distances, I don't expect it to be a trail where I have to worry about doing 30 kilometres a day. But, you know, it is sandy, and I'm expecting that to slow us down. And sand, particularly when you walk, even if you're not walking along the beach, you know, dry sand, because it is a sand island, does make a huge difference.
It's hard work, yeah.
The other thing, as I said, I'm not quite sure what the wildlife and exactly what the vegetation is going to be like. So I've seen photos, I've seen videos, but again, it's a bit hard to sort of pick down to the detail what sort of area we're likely to be walking through. So that's going to be a bit of a, well, we'll see what happens when we get there.
It's interesting to hear your list of unknowns, I guess. Mine is basically how I'm going to go to the toilet in the middle of the night without leaving my tent.
not a problem.
Because I'm not doing it. I guess I'm really quite concerned about these dingoes and the idea of getting up and, you know, just wandering off to have a wee and coming back. Normally that would just not worry me at all. Maybe it's a little bit different inside the fence, but I'm going to be checking out that fence to see how serious I should take it. So that's, you know, and again, maybe we've got nothing to worry about, but yeah, the dingoes really do start to, you know, start to play with your mind about some of these things. Not so much worried about the trail. I think we just experience what we experience and, you know, it'll be okay on the day. I think the logistics of getting to and from the trailhead in total, you know, there are so many things that can push all of that out. You know, basic things from planes running late, and, you know, does it mean that the shuttle has to wait to pick us up, and what happens to the ferry and so on. Yeah, so lots of those little things are probably more of a concern for me rather than what might happen on the trail, with the exception, of course, the dingoes.
Again, a lot of unknowns, at least from our perspective on this one. So we're looking forward to this walk. It's good to have a bit of a break. Normally for us, or myself in particular, I prefer to do my walks in July, August, September when it's cold. It's easy to get warm. It's a bit harder to get cool. So it's going to be interesting to see what it's like. And again, up in Queensland, I think the weather is forecast for reasonably sunny with just a small amount of rain. Yeah. So, you know, we'll certainly go sun-wise as well. So looking forward to it. Okay, we will bring you three more podcasts on this walk, starting with the next episode in 2 weeks' time. And we will have a full write-up along with that as well. So looking forward to it and looking forward to bringing you all the information that we can. That's all for me. Bye for now.
And bye from me.
Overall, those distances aren't overly onerous, and including in my case, I've got a kilt.